Before we sing, I thought we would, we have two sections that I plan to cover today. The first is to finish out chapter 12, and the next is about the first five verses. It's the first little section of chapter 13. But first, Luke chapter 12, Jesus gives a parable here, and then I plan to read. It's half a page, single space, but it'd be about a page if it was double spaced, that Kaufman wrote. But before we read it, ultimately what this parable is, it's getting our lives straight with God, with the adversary, which is Jesus. This is a parable and maybe the only parable, I think Kaufman might have referred to this as the only parable that Jesus refers to himself as an adversary. But what I'm confident he has written in here is that it wasn't strange to them that he referred to himself as the adversary, because every time he got out anywhere, these scribes, Pharisees, the priest, they were always attacking him. So he was always in an adversarial position. And so Kaufman said they would relate. It sounds strange to us, but from what these people were seeing, that he was adversarially attacked every time he got out in public, that they would relate to him being the adversary. But ultimately, it's everyone should settle with the adversary, and Jesus in this parable is referring to himself. It'd be like the prosecuting attorney. And settle before we go to court, because guess what? If we go before the judge, we'll be convicted and pronounced guilty and have an eternal punishment. So that's ultimately, in a nutshell, what this is. I'll go ahead and read it, and then I'll read what Kaufman has to say. So Luke 12, we'll start in verse 57. Luke 12, 57. Yes, and why, even of yourselves, do you not judge what is right? When you go with your adversary to the magistrate, make every effort along the way to settle with the adversary, which is Jesus. Lest Jesus drag you to the judge, and then the judge deliver you to the officer, and the officer throw you into prison. I tell you, you shall not depart from there until you have paid every last mite. Okay. So Kaufman starts out stating that this is a warning against procrastination. Today is the day of salvation. Tomorrow may be too late concept. And he says, like every good sermon, this one concludes with an exhortation to do something right now. Okay. The exhortation here is for action now. Do not wait until judgment is set, but make an agreement now while you are on the way. So the analogies in this teaching are, and he lists eight statements here. The first: just as the human system of courts decides human affairs, in the larger sphere of time and eternity, it is God, the judge of all, who makes decisions. Number two, all men are represented here as on the way to court, that is, moving unavoidably to that moment when all shall stand before the judge. Number three, the man in the parable had an opportunity to settle before he got to court, and so do men have a chance to make peace with God now. Four, while it was the adversary who provided the occasion for a reconciliation in the parable, it is different spiritually. The one who is with us on the way is Christ, who also shall judge men. Number five, letting the matter reach the judge can result only in disaster for the offender, and the man who does not prepare to meet God in advance of the judgment shall likewise encounter disaster. Number six, notice the necessary implication throughout that the offender on the way to court has a very poor case, there being no way that justice could decide in his favor. So he would be pronounced guilty. So better settle before you get to court. That's ultimately this parable. The seventh point. The necessary deduction that preparation should be made now before you go to court. Okay, and the last point that he has. Jesus' use of an analogy which makes him the adversary is illuminating. Such was the hostility of that generation that they would instantly have recognized him in the comparison. And then he quotes another commentator. Notice that the whole assumption is that the defendant has a bad case which will inevitably go against him. The universal wickedness of all men appears in such an assumption. Jesus' early statement that they should of themselves make a correct judgment is clear in that he was saying, "While you may not be wise enough to humble yourself and be reconciled to God, be converted instead of risking the inevitable consequences of coming to the judgment as an uncorrectable adversary of God." Now, on this last verse, verse 59, that says, "I tell you, you shall not depart from there until you have paid the very last mite." The comment that he made here is, this is not a promise that after one has paid for his sins in Gehenna, he shall at last be released as having discharged his debt. But this other commentator said, the tense of this phrase is future perfect, will have paid, and that moment never arrives. So it's a future tense that the person will never, that those that are convicted and are eternally in Gehenna will never be able to pay the very last mite to be released. The full repayment or liquidation of the debt is not possible for the guilty one, and condemnation lasts forever. Okay, any questions or comments on this? Now, I want to read one other passage that does not pertain to this, but it pertains to the next passage of Luke 13. But I want to read John chapter 9. John chapter 9. And this has to do with these first few verses in Luke 12. We'll read the first seven verses. And what this is about, and what I'm wanting us to pick up on, the apostles, well, and not just the apostles, but all of the Israelites had a misconception at that time that for sinful people, bad things happen to them. And when something bad happened to them, to someone, they would say, well, that person was a sinner and this was God getting back at them because of their sinful condition that we didn't know about. And Jesus is dispelling to the apostles here that false concept, as well as then the multitude in Luke 13, he's dispelling that same false thought, because the apostles had that thought, the multitude had the thought, and Jesus is correcting that false line of thinking. But John 9, verse 1. Now, as Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth. And Jesus' disciples, the 12 apostles, asked him, saying, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" And Jesus answered, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned." So that's the answer. Neither one. Neither one sinned. Bad condition or these bad mishaps, which there's two things that are announced that happened. in the past in Luke 13, and they had the same line of thinking. Well, what bad thing did they do? And the answer is there was no bad thing. It was an accident, but on these other occasions. This one, this man was just born blind. Now, Jesus says here that the reason that he was born blind was not for any sin, but that the works of God should be revealed in him. And so he ends up healing this man and restoring his sight. And it really, and here he's in Jerusalem. This is, I'm going to say about a year, but it could be two, but I'm going to say probably 1 year before this time in Luke that Jesus is at that time. So with these apostles, it's about a year ahead of time that he teaches them this thought before the multitude. But he heals this man, and it creates quite a stir in Jerusalem. But verse 4, I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. And so when Jesus had said these things, he spat on the ground and made clay with the saliva, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with clay, and he said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is translated sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. So his sight was restored. He did exactly what Jesus told him to do. And this Siloam also comes up in the first part of this Luke 13. So, and then there's one other instance that I'll bring up at the beginning of whenever we start with Luke 13. Another example of this was a long-held false thinking that preceded the Israelites. It had gone on for, I'll say, at least 2,000 years ahead of Jesus' time that we know of. And I figure it probably was even a thought maybe even before the flood. Maybe even Noah had this thought. I don't know. But it was at least soon after Noah, at the very least. But we'll kind of talk about that a little. But since, are there any questions or comments on this? Since this is 9 verse 4 here of John, that I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day, the night is coming when no one can work. Since this is this is the passage that we read, I thought we'll start with the song that this is based off of, which is number 722.